It's Jerry Corsi in the Great American Oil Conspiracy, and we're going to take your calls with Jerry in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jerry Corsi, your phone calls as well. Jerry, what's the reaction been so far to the Great Oil Conspiracy?
Well, George, it's been extremely positive. Thank you. The book has been selling both in hardcover and in ebook format. And it looks like we'll be having it in the stores for a long time. The supplies are out there now, and new orders are coming in.
Well, good for you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Good for you. Now, back to the abiotic oil theory, the Russians, and of course, the suppression now to keep their lid so the prices don't plummet. Who's behind that? The oil companies? Are they in cahoots with somebody?
I think, George, it's been a combination of both the government and oil companies over a long period of time, going back to World War II, that, you know, if people believe oil is fossil fuel, there's only so many fossils. There can only then be so much oil. We have to be running out. You hit peak oil, and you can always charge more for something that's scarce. The reality is that we have more oil today than ever in human history. We've got something like 1.3 trillion barrels of proven reserves, according to the Energy Information Agency, the Department of Energy, despite our use of oil doubling since the 1970s. So there is abundant oil, and the United States is positioned to be, Goldman Sachs says, by 2017, perhaps the leading producer of oil and natural gas in the world. So the United States is not running out of oil or natural gas either. There's no reason for us to have dependency on foreign oil, which is very detrimental to our currency position.
No question about it, Jerry. And as you said earlier, that the United States may one day be the biggest producer. When do you think that could happen?
I think by 2017. I think
before that's not too far away.
Before the, you know, that's really, I mean, within 5 years. If you really take a look at this, it's fairly startling. I include the Goldman Sachs findings in the book, and you can see that Goldman Sachs is right. Our oil production in the United States is increasing dramatically. And if we just were to take some of the restrictions off offshore drilling or to allow the pipelines to be put into place that we have proposed to be there, the industry has proposed, I think we could very rapidly be the leading nation in the world in oil production, beating even Saudi Arabia. I mean, people have to think that's an astounding claim, but just go look at the numbers Goldman Sachs produces.
How did the theory of fossil fuels start, that it came from dinosaurs and vegetation?
It's very interesting, George. It goes back to about the period of Humboldt, these naturalists. There was a Russian, Lomonosov, I believe his name was. It's hard to pronounce. But at any rate, there was this idea that oil kind of looks like decaying material, like a swamp is kind of nasty and dark and damp, and that's what ultimately rotted, and with high temperatures and pressures, even our petrogeologists say it produces kerogen, and then that turns into oil. Well, George, the truth is, I buried a lot of people in my life and my family, unfortunately, and, generations, and you say, I've never had to talk to a mortician and say that you better line that casket because Aunt Matilda is going to turn into diesel number two. Biological material deteriorates into constituent chemicals. It doesn't produce oil over any long period of time, no matter how deep you bury it or what kind of temperature or pressure.
Why do so many people believe in that theory of fossil fuels?
It astounds me, George. It really astounds. One of those ideas that is, popular theories, popular ideas.
Is it because that they care about the environment and they think that it's bad for the environment and they get upset if they hear the abiotic oil theory? What do you think it is?
I think that's a component to it, George. I think people have been
And everybody wants a clean environment. Everybody does.
Oil and hydrocarbons are bad. They're nasty. They can't be burned cleanly or efficiently.
Well, they could be if you don't do it the right way.
Well, of course. Exactly, George. And irresponsible use of any natural resource is detrimental both to the environment and to human beings or to life. But we can intelligently use the natural resources. And the history is, You know, since the 1950s, we have cleaner air. We're using much more hydrocarbon fuel than we ever were. Liquid natural gas is now available. Natural gas is coming on the market. It's a very clean fuel in comparison to, you know, what you think of in the 1950s with leaded gasoline.
Right.
And people have to realize the technology is improving so that our scientists, I believe if we allowed the oil companies to go and the natural gas companies to engage in a less regulated environment, that we would have cleaner, more abundant and cheaper energy that we could use to build and fuel an economy. The regulations and the restrictions and the ideological concerns often, you know, founded on fuzzy ideas that somehow or other green technologies, even the idea of green technologies is we all think of green as plants and that's healthy. Well, what's green about solar energy or what's green about the wind?
Well, and, you know, and some of the problems too is, you know, you have these people, they put in things like MTBEs at the time, you know, as an anti-knocking agent.
Right.
And they polluted the world.
Well, yes. And again, there's always detrimental or inappropriate things you can do with any energy.
Ethanol's better.
Yeah, ethanol. Well, ethanol is, but, you know, ethanol, as I point out in the Great Oil Conspiracy, even the Congressional Budget Office has done studies showing that the increases in the price of corn is detrimental to food prices around the world. In fact, there's a number of scientists and economists who are very concerned that some of the starvation we're facing in the world could and has resulted from the higher corn prices driven by ethanol.
Sure. But we can make ethanol out of other products.
Well, you can make, this is one of the great secrets about oil. You can make oil out of almost anything. You can make it out of garbage. You can make it out of
turkey parts.
Right?
Literally.
Parts.
Let's take some calls here, Jerry. Let's pick it up by going first of all to David in Somos, California, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, good evening.
Hi, Dave.
Jerry. Hi, I'm a longtime listener, third-time caller.
Thank you.
Thank you for the program. I'm very much enjoying it as usual. Here's a couple of questions. Number one is we know there have been a couple of conspiracies vis-a-vis the use of gasoline, tires, automobiles, et cetera, like in Los Angeles, California, where they got rid of the red car back when. So I have the two-part question. A, is the conspiracy vis-a-vis the depletion of the natural resources one that the government and big industry participated in together to uphold, shall we say, profit-making, for lack of better terms, even though I'm not against that? And B, is there anything we consumers can do in, you know, America to help impact this situation where this theory is incorrect and we're getting overcharged?
Two good questions, Jerry. Go ahead.
Well, it's also complex. There's no simple answer because it goes back decades. And government officials, you know, who have known the Fischer-Tropsch equations, have known the Nazis were producing synthetic oil, have known that Russia is producing deep earth oil. This information has been withheld from the American people for some for ideological reasons, prejudices against hydrocarbon fuel, some for economic reasons. If we think that oil is scarcer or natural gas is scarce, you can charge more for it. I think the best way to combat it, what I'm trying to do with the, you know, various writings I've done on oil over the years, this book, The Great Oil Conspiracy, is to challenge people to look at the science and to look at the data and to realize that when we're getting oil from, you know, miles beneath the surface of the water or the surface of the earth, that the abiotic theory has great logic to it. And peak oil, which is the result of fossil fuels, has been a theory which has constantly been proven wrong. All the predictions that we all, these Hubert's peak and everything, that we're running out of oil by such and such a date, those predictions have never been true. And when the predictions of a theory scientifically are not validated, then the theory needs to be thrown out.
All right, next up, they call him Treetop, driving in Texas on the wildcard line. Hi, Treetop, go ahead.
Hey, George, Dr. Corsi, it's a pleasure to talk to y'all. I drive a truck, and There was an engineer that worked for Caterpillar back in 04 that reported they were coming out with an engine that was going to burn a lot cleaner and get over 9 miles per gallon. And, of course, what happened to him, he lost his job. And he lost his job, and he can't even buy a Caterpillar engine in America anymore for a truck. It's this bureaucracy. It's just kind of like the DEF fluid, for example, we burn in our trucks now. It's all it is ammonium nitrate. And back after the Oklahoma City bombing, you couldn't even say ammonium nitrate without getting fear of something happening. Now you can buy it at the pump, you know, and it's it's crazy. And we call it conspiracy theory, this the things y'all report on, but it's actually the truth, you know. And we're just getting sick of this stuff, you know.
What are you paying for diesel these days, Treetop?
Oh, it's over $4 a gallon now. $4.12 I saw out here in Texas. It's around $4.12 a gallon.
That's the price point where independent drivers get crushed, isn't it?
Yes, sir. It is. It's crazy, you know, and it's ultimately the price is passed down to the consumer, which is me and you and Dr. Corsi, that the price that diesel to get the goods to the market, I haul milk, you know, and it's, you know how much milk has gone up.
Absolutely. I'm not a milk drinker anymore, but I can imagine what the price is.
Yes, sir. You know, you're looking at probably $4 a gallon or better, you know, where it used to be a little over $2.
It's amazing. All about the money, Jerry. Thanks, Treetop.
Well, yes, and George, there's no reason diesel fuel should cost more than gasoline. Diesel fuel, it does not require the same degree of refining. And Treetop also makes a very good point, and that is we're not just talking about the price of gasoline, but the price of all the goods and commodities in the economy.
Everything goes up. If you increase the price of diesel, which is hauling that stuff to stores, those prices for those things are going to go up too.
And as part of the great oil conspiracy, recognize that now the consumer price index, we don't even factor in increases in energy costs. They factor those out because, again, it looks like we have less inflation if we don't increase, you know, include the calculation of increasing energy.
Can you imagine what would be going on with this economy today if we had $1.25 for a gallon of gasoline?
Well, the economy would thrive.
Oh, my gosh. Cars would be selling like hotcakes. Everything
Precisely.
Would be booming.
And the, you know, the ability to generate all the activities of an industrial economy would be increased. Suddenly you could recalculate costs of producing goods in the United States versus in China, because you'd have cheaper energy costs. And if we have abundant energy in the United States such that we could be leading the world in energy production, oil and natural gas, by 2017, why don't we have it available today?
2017 will go by like that, Jerry,
exactly.
Won't it?
It's 5 years, George, Scary. 5 years.
You and I will be on the air talking about this, saying, remember back in 2012, we were talking about that.
Well, remember we had the debate with Michael Rupert in 2006.
Yeah.
And again, that was, you know, a debate that's still being played on the internet and still being remembered. And again, the idea of abiotic oil, the abundance of oil and the availability has since 2006, and we have even more evidence today. Offshore drilling is the fastest growing part of the oil industry, and there's no prospect that's going to stop.
Let's go to Justin in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Justin, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I just had a question, couple questions, actually. One, regarding the idea of this abiotic fluid being something natural that's just produced in the Earth's mantle. I'm just wondering about the idea of that being released into the atmosphere, and if that's somehow maybe mimicking, plate tectonic activity. Just a quick comment. Mr. Corsi was saying that there's no innate danger to these products. Well, it's just kind of crazy because, you know, they actually are cancer-causing agents. I mean, there's benzene, there's all sorts of different byproducts that come out of the whole petrochemicals. And, you know, burning things in general is kind of, you know, it's going to go the way of the past. I mean, when you've got Tesla technology coming around the corner here in mass, destroy our planet. It seems kind of crazy to keep holding on to this dinosaur, no pun intended. And the only people it seems it's going to serve is like the petrochemical industries.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Be shooting down the whole thing that they have this propaganda going to boost their prices, but yet you want to support them maintaining their hold on the market of energy, which is it's antique. I mean, we're moving into the 21st century here. Do you guys ever listen to your own program?
George, there's always this. I mean, this is the common prejudice here that you see. I mean, people are saying, 21st century, why don't we use solar or wind? Well, the technologies just aren't robust. They don't work. And the prejudice against hydrocarbons has, yes, there's detrimental elements for health and environment if you do not use the hydrocarbon products intelligently or to the full extent the technology would permit you to clean them. But, again, people have the same prejudice against nuclear energy, which is, the ultimate energy. Probably we'll be running nuclear batteries in our cars before we run out of oil and natural gas.
True.
And, there's no reason that, there's airplanes crash. Well, we don't stop flying airplanes. We make them safer. We figure out ways to make them more efficient.
Mm-hmm. We ground them during inclement weather now.
Right. And it's the same intelligence that has to be used with hydrocarbon fuels. What I'm saying is if they're natural, if they're abiotic, produced by the earth, then they're not inherently or intrinsically evil or detrimental. We should be able to figure out ways to utilize natural resources, including hydrocarbon fuels, intelligently, and for the general advancement of both the environment and the economy.
Okay, let's go to Ray in Hollywood, California. Hey, go ahead, Ray.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Joe.
Sure.
Hi, Jerry. Jerry, right?
Yes, Jerry.
Yeah, I have I've done some research about the reason why the prices of gas are so high. And I've dug up some very peculiar, things that... The prices are high because of Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs on Wall Street is manipulating the oil prices of the oil companies by saying that the oil prices are, they trade in microseconds, at these high prices, when the oil companies have not paid more than $50 a barrel since the last 10 years. So Goldman Sachs is charging us, is ripping the public off at the pump with these high prices to pay off the dividends and the interest and the returns of the oil companies' investors. That's why. So that's what we are paying for that. That's why in Saudi Arabia, a gallon of gas is 60 cents, okay? So somebody's ripping us off here big time. And I know it's Goldman Sachs because Goldman Sachs wakes up in the morning with a buck up his sphincter, and he says, I want $3,000 gold.
Well, somebody's behind it. Jerry, we're coming up to the top of the hour, bottom of the hour break. Stay with us. We're going to come back and take a few more phone calls with you in just a moment. We're talking with Jerry Corsi. Final phone calls up next. His work, The Great Oil Conspiracy. It's the subline here, how the U.S. government hid the Nazi discovery of abiotic oil from the American people. Well, you talk about conspiracies. Next hour, Clint Werner joins us as we talk about marijuana, gateway to health, an incredible story, how he believes cannabis protects us from cancer and Alzheimer's disease. I'm looking forward to that. We'll come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll take final phone calls with Jerry Corsi, author of the book The Great Oil Conspiracy, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Jerry Corsi with us. Jerry, do you think the major oil companies are sitting back going, gosh, we know there's so much oil here, and we know that it's done naturally? Or do you think there's arguments within?
I think there may yet be some arguments within, but generally, the major oil companies around the world know that oil is abundant and are developing technologies to go after deeper earth oil and farther out from the continental shelf. I'd say if we look out 10 years from now, the idea that oil was fossil fuel or that it was scarce or that we were running out, these are ideas that are going to be kind of curious ideas as to why anybody ever believed them. But oil, fossil fuel, no fossil ever produced fuel. Fossil is
the animal's long gone and you're dealing with a, you know, like petrified wood. It's silica that has metamorphized into rock. The tree is long gone.
Other than a tick, Jerry, I think everything on this planet has a reason. So this oil that's being taken out of the earth, what do you think it's there for in the first place?
Well, I think, George, that's my view as well, that, I mean, the resources that are here on the earth are able to be applied and used intelligently for the advancement of human beings, for the advancement of the planet. Do not have to be detrimental to the environment if they're used correctly or properly. And the ingenuity of human beings to figure out how to apply and use these resources. I mean, there was a famous debate between Paul Ehrlich, you know, who is always worried that we're running too many people, too much population, we're running out of everything, and Julian Simon, the resource economist. And Julian Simon bets the future prices of a whole series of different resources and won the bet because Simon was betting that the future, the resources would be cheaper, more available, more readily produced at more reasonable prices. And Ehrlich's fear that we were running out of all these things turned out to be hysterical.
Okay, let's go to the phones again. Scott is truck driving in Virginia. Go ahead, Scotty.
Hey, good morning, George. Good morning, Jerry.
Morning.
First, a little suggestion. The Native American Music Awards are coming up in the next couple of months. You might could play that for some bumper music. I live in upstate New York, which live about 20 miles away from the very first petroleum ever discovered in the country, 1627 in Cuba, New York, on the Oil Springs Indian Reservation. So this is touching my heart. The question I have is, why can't we not refine our own oil in our own country? Why does it have to be shipped out and then refined, sent back to refine?
We should be able to refine all the oil we need in our own country. I mean, there's no reason we can't. The limitation's been we have not built new refineries.
We've got old ones, don't we?
Right, we're using old refineries, and the limitation there is mostly political. It's the not-in-my-backyard syndrome. People don't want refineries. They're nasty. They smell bad. But yet there's plenty of places we could put refineries that, again, could be environmentally sound and efficient. They require tremendous investment. And politically, the barriers, the obstacles, the regulations are so onerous that it's hard to think about putting capital into that much of a regulated industry.
Okay, let's go to Dennis in Santa Monica, California, west of the Rockies. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I love your program for the enlightenment and education you bring us.
Well, very good.
Well, I had one question, and I guess it's two quick questions because while I was on hold, I thought of another one.
Okay.
My big question is, the Nazis synthesized oil from coal, so we're saying oil is abiotic. Aren't we saying that coal must be abiotic as well? Otherwise, the entire argument breaks down, doesn't it?
Let's answer that one first. No, the point is that the equations the Nazis developed in learning how to make oil from coal were equations that applied beyond that process to identify how the Earth makes coal naturally. And you can make oil from many different materials. You can make it from biological materials if you want. Like we said earlier, turkey parts or garbage. I mean, well, the point is that oil does not require a biological process in order to be created. And the Earth produces oil, as does our solar system, with hydrocarbons naturally without any biological agent being involved. That's the point.
Okay. Let's go to Boston. John's with us. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. I got lucky again today. I have to second the people's remarks about what a wonderful program this is and what a wonderful bunch of questions you get from your audience. My question was whether Dr. Corsi has been following the cold fusion scene and specifically the work of Dr. Andrea Rossi, I'm not sure he's doctor, but Andrea Rossi of Italy and his energy catalyzer. But George, you had a guy named Dr. Louis Turi on back in March who was he got my attention when he said cold fusion is going to be the new energy source, and resonated with what I'd been hearing on the show about Rossi. Basically, his gadget takes an atom of a nucleus of hydrogen and fuses it with an atom of nickel to transmute the nickel into copper, and it's exothermic. It releases a great deal of energy, and he's got a half megawatt working device, supposedly. I haven't heard anything since then, but back a year or so ago, he had a half megawatt gadget running and customers buying and so forth.
Yeah.
Any word on that, Jerry?
One day, Jerry, that's going to pop big.
Yes, I'm very enthusiastic about the developments in cold fusion. I think I anticipate there will be breakthroughs. Also, it validates one of the points I make in the Great Oil Conspiracy. Julian Simon made this point, you know, the energy economist, and that is that new technologies for energy and new forms of energy inevitably develop before we exhaust the ones we're currently using. So, for instance, in the 1850s, when the Industrial Revolution in England was worried they were going to run out of coal, well, then oil came along and then natural gas. You know, the British Navy abandoned running on coal and went to oil. We're now finding new energies. Certainly nuclear is one. It has its problems. It's not a panacea, but again, it has potentials. And cold fusion has to be put on the list, as is various hydrogen forms of energy that have been looked at and experimented with. Hydrogen is a very efficient form of energy. It's just very difficult to compress and to make economical to store.
Well, there's no question about that. We're going to go through a metamorphosis, I think, Jerry, in the next few years as well.
I think so, George. I think our awareness is going to get beyond some of these ideological prejudices. You know, people would like to believe that wind or solar are solutions. They would like to believe in these green energies. But when they've been tried, including ethanol, they have not been efficient or economical to produce. They're not economically viable. The energies, for instance, solar or wind, yes, you could put some solar panels on your home and save on electric bills, possibly. But running a major city with these energies is not possible. And some major entrepreneurs, T. Boone Pickens, found the problems when he was willing to put $1 billion into a wind farm in Pampa, Texas, and it just didn't work out. Now, I have tremendous regard for T. Boone Pickens. He's one of the most brilliant energy people in the world. And if T. Boone Pickens couldn't figure out a way to do it, then it merits second thought as to whether wind technology is really a viable technology for the future.
It's Jay's turn now in St. Clairsville, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Thanks, Jay. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. And George, thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you.
I work 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. 4 nights a week, and from 1 to 5 a.m. is the favorite part of my shift. So,
super.
Having said that, I really like what Jerry has to say, a conspiracy, the oil, great oil conspiracy. We're also suffering a conspiracy on coal. Where we are in eastern Ohio and Pennsylvania, West Virginia, on over to Illinois, we're known as probably like the Saudi Arabia of coal.
That's right.
And what's occurring now is the current administration and combined with the EPA is shutting down coal-fired power plants all over our area in our region. I work for a very progressive coal company, and our future is so unstable. You know, when the president was running back in 08, he said, if you're welcome to build a coal-fired plant, but if you do, we'll bankrupt you. And we're losing jobs left and right, not only in mining, but we're losing it at the power plants. And for every coal mining job, there's 7 jobs that spin off from that. Likewise, with the power plant workers, they support it's a trickle-down type deal where there's 7 other jobs. We're talking hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of jobs. And we do have the technology and the ability to burn clean coal. So I guess mine is more of a statement other than Jerry, I'd love to know more about how economical it could be in converting coal to oil. My gosh, with the price of the barrels now, you know, what they're charging for it, maybe a ton of coal is a far better deal than, as you had indicated earlier, 5 cents for gas and 20 cents for oil produced from coal. Well, if we could tighten that ratio up, it sure would keep a lot of people working in our area.
Well,
my question is, could it be feasible? Or would the big oil companies just drive us out of business?
Well, first of all, I grew up in Ohio, so I understand what you're talking about. And I think clearly coal is hugely available in the United States. We are the Saudi Arabia of coal. Coal can be burned cleanly. It's a tragedy that we're not exploring the use of coal. It's an abundant resource in the United States. Shutting down coal plants makes absolutely no sense to me, or electric plants that burn coal. I think it's absolutely moving in the wrong direction. And we should be moving in the direction of using more of the energy we have available more cleanly, which can be done. And the prize in the Nazi science was not to convert coal to oil. That's still very expensive. That'll probably always be very expensive. But to realize that coal and oil are both natural abiotic products, not fossil fuels, not limited, created by the earth. They're natural products, and we should be able to figure out how to use them efficiently, cleanly, and cheaply.
Will we ever be able to do that, Jerry?
Yes, I think the technology is available. Just like the gentleman said, the technology is available.
I mean, the industry, the coal industry, is a shell of itself, isn't it?
Well, again, I think this is the caller was also right. It is a political and ideological prejudice against coal that's not founded on the reality, either of the abundance of coal or the ability to burn it cleanly. We could be stimulating our economy not only by producing coal and producing it in a clean fashion, but also by having the lowering of price of energy, which would occur if we could use our domestic coal supply.
Do we export coal?
We should. We do to some extent. But again, what's happening in the United States is the coal industry is being systematically shut down by politics.
Yeah.
This is a tragedy. I mean, again, politicians need to have a comprehensive energy policy. As I point out in the book, the comprehensive energy policy would look at utilizing the full range of our resources, including coal, to maximize the cheap energy that we can produce, and we can produce in an environmentally safe way.
All right, next up, let's go to Hudson, Wisconsin. Kevin's with us, first-time caller. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Yeah, it's first-time calling. I like your show. I just got to say I love it. My question basically has to do with I had a buddy, his dad, he built a car that could get like 90 miles a gallon, right?
Wow.
And within about a week or so of building it, some people came to his door and they told him to basically shut down, dismantle this vehicle or we'll take it from you. And so what my question has to do with is, I think oil is a new basis of what money is, how gold used to back money. I think if they let the public know about how oil is more abundant, they use that scarcity as a tactic to keep that money supply as gold was. Would you concur?
I think the price of oil is unreasonably high because people think it's scarce, and the economic regulations, and the government restrictions on the development of hydrocarbons are, in fact, causing us economic harm worldwide. So, you know, I agree with you on that. In terms of the efficiencies of energy, yes, we could have much more efficient engines. And there's a variety of reasons we don't, including economics and politics. Some of the engines, I mean, you can run an engine, George, on water because of hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be done.
Like the old movie, One Step Beyond. Remember
yes, exactly.
That one?
And you know, that's not; those are not apocryphal stories. They're true. That you know, people have produced engines, and they have been sometimes politically suppressed or economically suppressed. I've always encouraged the development of these alternative engines because I think that again, there's much more creativity, and there are many more solutions to the problems. We don't the internal combustion engines we use today are nothing like the ones we were using in the 40s and 50s. Technological advancements are tremendous and would be even more tremendous
with fewer regulations in place.
Let's get one more call in here. We'll go to Stan in Dallas. Get you in here, Stan. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've talked about why the price of oil and gasoline is so high, despite the fact that there's obviously a lot of it. And I think what we're overlooking is the fact that I think I heard once that the oil company's profit margin is like 3 to 5%. And, you know, there's still a lot of money because we handle so much oil. But to the state, local, and federal government, fuel and gas tax is a 100% profit margin. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's to the advantage of every level of government to have the price of oil and gasoline and diesel as high as possible, because all taxes are based on a percentage of the retail price. You see what I'm saying?
I think it's a very good point. The oil companies, I think increasingly the major oil and natural gas companies around the world are willing to acknowledge that oil is abiotic and abundant. And if we allowed the oil companies to do what they are capable of doing, and with only reasonable requirements and regulations, not such onerous requirements and regulations, the profit margin in the oil industry is not exorbitant. It's a reasonable and difficult to achieve profit margin. We demonize oil companies, I think, unreasonably, when in fact they are doing a great job and would do a better job if they were allowed to be economically run and not so dominated by ideological and political restraints.
All right, Jerry, tell us where you can get your book, The Great Oil Conspiracy.
The Great Oil Conspiracy is available everywhere. It's now in the bookstores. It's just coming in and should be available in bookstores across the country now. It's also an e-book. It's available online with Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the WND Superstore. It's widely available and just beginning to be introduced into the market this week, George. You're really the first national show on the book, and thank you for that.
Super, and we're keeping our eyes on Iran, aren't we?
Very much.
Gosh,
daily.
What are your sources telling you, Jer?
Now the debate is down to, is the war going to occur before the election? And a lot of sources I have are arguing that Israel may launch the attack in October if they believe that Obama is going to win a re-election, because Israel is unconfident that the Obama administration's second term would be a solid ally.
All right, we shall see. Jerry Corsi, thank you so much. Jerry's book, The Great Oil Conspiracy, with our special split two-part show tonight. Up next, we'll be talking with Clint Warner about marijuana, Gateway to Health. This is his book, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM.